Today's shir in the Daf Yomi is the Gemara in Yevamos Daf Kuf Yud Tes. We begin the very last parak in Yevamos, the 16th parak. We're learning today for Refuah Shleima for someone who's undergoing a procedure on the first day of Rosh Chodesh Tammuz. Mitzvah Hashem, it should be successful. And all those in need of Refuah Shleima, so Shachar Yisrael should have a Refuah Shleima. We begin the very top, Kuf Yud Tes, Samad Aleph, with the new Mishnah at the beginning of the new parak. Ha'isha Shaholach Bala Vitzoroso Lemdina Sayam. A woman is married to a husband, she has a co-wife, and the husband and the co-wife go off on a business trip. They're off in the Medina Sayyam, they're going off far away, and Ubo, people come back and tell them, Nebuch, the Amru Law, they tell the wife who remained behind, Meiz Balach, your husband died. So now, she and the co-wife are going to be Mechuyevis in Yibam if there is no children. If there are no children in this marriage by either her or from the co-wife. Her husband is dead now. So she's not allowed to go get married to somebody else because maybe the co-wife has had child. But she can't go and have Yibam with the brother-in-law who's still here because maybe, in fact, the co-wife did have a child. Even though when they left, there were no children. Rashi says, when they left, neither she nor the co-wife had children. But here in this situation, we have to be concerned that maybe while they were overseas, the co-wife did in fact have a child, and now there is an isser of Eishes Ach Shelo b'Makom Mitzvah. So until we find out what's going on, lo tinosif lo tisyabim, why? Shema me'uberes hitzarasa, because maybe the co-wife was in fact pregnant, as Rashi says, Shema yolda tzarasa, she gave birth. And in this situation, she can't undergo Yibam. And at the same time, since we don't know this, we can't let her go and get married. Gemara will explain this more in detail, what the concern is over here. Why not do Chalitza? And this way, Mimonoshach, if there is a child, so big deal, she underwent Chalitza. And if there is no child, so then, she underwent Chalitza. Gemara will discuss. Next scenario in the Mishnah. Most the woman has a mother-in-law. Now the mother-in-law is capable still of having children. She's not a zakena. So she has a mother-in-law who still could have children, and she is with her husband overseas. And in this situation, where the husband dies, we don't know, is there a yavam or not? When they left, there was no brother-in-law. So at the present time, as Rashi says, she's in the Bedina Sayyam, Ukishiyotza, lo hayolo ben. So right now there's no yavam. Vein yavam lazu. So in this situation, we don't have to be concerned. The Mishnah tells us, Eina choshesh, that maybe the mother-in-law gave birth to a child, and now there's a yavam, and she can't go get married until she undergoes Yibam Mechalitza with this new brother-in-law. However, Yotza Baleya, if she went out when she was pregnant, as Rashi says, Yotza Chamosa Meuberes, she was pregnant. The Rashash says that we use the Lashon of Malaya over here as a woman instead of Meuberes, that she's close to term, she's Malaya, she's near term. So this mother-in-law went out pregnant, albeit no child other than the husband, but she is pregnant, expecting another child. Here in this situation, Choshesh, we don't allow the wife to get married because maybe her mother-in-law has a child and maybe there is a boy that was born, and therefore we have to wait to undergo Yibam in this situation, or Chalitza. Rabbi Yeshua disagrees. Rabbi Yeshua Omer, Eino Choshesh. Rabbi Yeshua says, no. Number one, some women miscarry, so it's not a guarantee that the child is born. And then even if the child is born, if the child is a girl, there is no mitzvah of Yibam. So when you take into account that 50% of the children that are going to be born are going to be girls, and that there's a chance of miscarriage, that's the majority. And therefore, it's only a miut that we have to be concerned about, that she gave birth to a boy child that would be waiting to do Yibam with her, and therefore we don't have to be choshesh for this, and the woman is allowed to go get married. Again, the moral discuss. The other opinion, which seems to suggest in the Reisha that we do have to wait, and we'll see that this is the opinion of Rav Meir, who's choshesh lemiyuta, that he's concerned about this minority likelihood that she had a son. Okay, that's the Mishnah. A lot was said over here. Let's go on to the Gemara. Mahi tzarasa. Why did it use this funny language over here where it said, acheteda shema muberes hi tzarasa? It should have just said, acheteda shema muberes tzarasa. What does it mean, hi tzarasa? So the Mishnah is telling us an important Chiddush. The Gemara says, "Hakom Ashulon lehot zarahu dechayshinun abul tzara achrite lo chayshinun." That we only have to be concerned about this tzara. We don't have this is a known tzara to us. But as Rashi points out, in bo edim she'ain tzaras mubaris. If you did have witnesses come and say, "Yes, this other co-wife definitely did not give birth. She is not pregnant, and there are no children. We don't have to be concerned that maybe while he was overseas, the husband took another wife. We don't have to be concerned that, how do you know he didn't get married to another woman and maybe had a child with her? And in this situation, we say, no, she can undergo yibum with the remaining brother-in-law that stayed behind over here, and there is no concern that maybe he got married to another woman. There's another tzara who might possibly have children. So that's what it means. Shema Tuberes, he tzarasa. It's only this known tzara that we have to be concerned about, but we don't have to be concerned that maybe there are other tzaras that are now in the picture as well when he went overseas. Now, the Mishnah said, lo tinase, lo tisiaben v'chule. In this situation where the tzara was known, albeit she didn't have children when they left, so the Mishnah said we have to be concerned. Maybe she became pregnant overseas, because that's what women do. Women do become pregnant, Baruch Hashem, when they're married, and therefore maybe she in fact had a child. So maybe she didn't. So she can't, the remaining wife here cannot get married because maybe there wasn't a child, but she also can't undergo Yibam because we don't definitely know that the husband died childless, and maybe the co-wife did have a child, and that would be an aishas ach shel obim malchum mitzvah and be an issa to do yibum with the brother-in-law that stayed behind. Now, Gemara says, we understand, bishlama yibum me'lo, the doma mi'abra, u'kapoga be'aishas ach d'araisa. As I just explained, we understand why she can't undergo yibum with her yavam, because maybe, in fact, the tzara did have a child, and now this would be an issa of erva, aishas ach shel obim malchum mitzvah, and obviously that's an issa d'araisa of significant consequences, and that's why we can't let her undergo yibum. However, why can't she go get married to somebody Lashuk? Ella Lotinose Amai, why can't she go get married to somebody? And we say that since the likelihood is Holech Acharov Noshim, go after what happens to the majority of women. The majority of women, when they get married, Baruch Hashem, Bli Ayin Hara, they have children. Virov Noshim is Abros Vyoldos. The majority of women do in fact go get married, get pregnant, and then have children. So why don't we presume that the tzara was with her husband overseas and, in fact, did have a child? So the Gemara says, it must be that we are concerned that this is the sheet of Rav Meir in our Mishnah. He's the author of our Mishnah, who the Chayish Lemiuta. Rav Meir is the author who is always, throughout Shas, concerned about minorities. We have many examples. Rav Meir is Choshesh Lemiuta. He's concerned about minority likelihoods, a lower likelihood event, but it's a miut, but it's still something that he's concerned about. And in this situation, let us say that the author of the Mishnah is Rav Meir, says that even though the majority of women do get married and have children, this woman got married but did not have children. It's a minority, most do, but he's Choshesh Lemiyuta, so Rav Meir is the author of our Mishnah. And that's why Lo Tinase. The Gemara says, Lo, we don't have to lock our Mishnah into being the Das Yochev Rav Meir, the Gemara suggests. Afilu Tem Rabbanan. Our Mishnah can even go according to the opinion of the Rabbanan that Arach Choshesh for this Miyuta. Aye, then why over here do they say that she's not allowed to go get married Lashuk if we say the majority of women are in fact going to get pregnant and have a live child? So then why are we choshesh with this minority opinion if we're not with Meir? Someone says no. Ki azle rabbanan bas aruba. When do we say that we follow the majority? That's what we call aruba de ise kamon. That's by a physical majority that's right in front of us, such as kigon teisha chanuyos. If you have 10 stores, 9 of them sell kosher meat and 1 sells non-kosher meat, and now you find a piece of meat in the street, so then the likelihood is 90% chance that it came from the stores that sell kosher meat. Only a 10% chance that it came from the store that sells non-kosher meat. In this situation, you have the halachic right to go after the majority because there's a real extant majority right in front of us. 9 stores kosher, 1 store non-kosher. Or the Sanhedrin. We have the right to follow the majority ruling with Sanhedrin. For example, if you have a capital case that's being brought to the Sanhedrin, and 12 of them paskin that the person is innocent, and 11 are paskin that the person is guilty, so 12 versus 11, we paskin like the majority. That's called the ruba, the isse kamon. This is a rove that is right in front of us. It's a physical rove, and we can say you go after the rove. But in a concept such as most women give birth, that's called a ruba, the lesse kamon. And there, the halacha is different. Even the chacham say you have to be choshish for a miyuta in that situation. Avaruba, the lesse kaman, lo azle rabbanan basaruba. In a construct that, yes, the majority of women give birth, but right now we have this woman in front of us, so then we don't follow the rov. We have to be concerned for the miyut, even according to the opinion of the chachamim. When it's aruba, the lesse kaman, lo azle rabbanan basaruba. Someone says that's not right. I'll show you that that's not true. That even in a situation where it's a ruba, the less they come on, the rabbis are not choshish for a miyut. Vare kata nuktana. You have a boy below the age of bar mitzvah, a girl below the age of bas mitzvah, which is the ruba, the less they come on, he, that we're dealing with what will happen to this katun or this katana. So this is not something that we're saying, well, there's 10 over here and there's only 5 over here. Let's go after the 10. When we're dealing here with whether this child will or will not grow up to be an adult mature male, whether this girl will or not go up to be an adult mature female, so then there's only one child in front of us, either this one boy or this one girl. And yes, the vast majority of children, Baruch Hashem, grow up healthy and become a mature adult. The vast majority of boys and girls, each will become a mature a male or female adult, but a small percentage will not. And yet, for Ozli Rabban and Basar Ruba, and the rabbis in this situation do follow the robe, as we'll see clearly, and we've learned this in the Masechet already, and Rav Meir is the one that does not. So you see that even though it's a ruba, the less they come on, we're dealing with one child in front of us, but we're dealing with the construct, the concept that, yes, children in fact mature, the majority of children mature, and we see the rabbis are not worried about the miyuta in the situation. The also rabban and basar ruba, even though it's a ruba, the less they come on. What's the case? Titanya. Kotu ketana lo chotzim lo miyabin. We don't allow, as we said many times already, a katan or a ketana to undergo chalitza or yibum. Divri Rabeya. That is the opinion of Rabeya. Now, the Chachamim allow it. So, Amulol Rabeya, the rabbi said to Rabeya, we understand why we don't allow chalitza. With that, we don't allow a katan or a ketana to do. Yofa Amar Tashayin Cholzer, because this is based upon the pasuk where it says, Ish Kisiv Baparsha, in regards to chalitza, it says, a man who undergoes chalitza, so that is talking about an adult male, and therefore, like the man has to be an adult male, so too, machshin and ishul ishul, we compare the laws of the man to the woman, and we understand that that's why both a man and a woman have to be adults in order to undergo chalitza. Okay, no problem, we agree with you, it has nothing to do with majorities, it has to do with the din and the Torah, it says it has to be an adult male or an adult female. However, elamatam ein miyabim, why don't you allow yibim to occur? Amar lehem, so Rebbe says, because, you know what, there is a mitzvah over here to be mekayim shem ochiv, to go and have a child, so to say, in the place of the dead brother. And therefore, you have to be a mature adult male or a mature adult female for this din to go and become a halacha, that it's eishes achsh b'makom mitzvah. But if, Rachmana Litzlan, you're dealing with an islandess or you're dealing with a saris, the boy is a saris, he's not going to be able to have children. And when he grows up, he's not able to have children. The girl is an islandess. When she grows up, she's not going to be able to have children. So then the din of Yibin doesn't apply. Then it's Eishes Ach Shelo B'Makom Mitzvah, and it's an Isser D'Oraisa. So that's what Rebbe says. Rebbe tells him, Amlem, Katan, the reason why I don't allow Katan to Yibin, because maybe when he grows up, Katan Shema Imotzi Saris, will turn out to be a Saris. And then in retrospect, this was not permitted. And likewise, the Katan, I don't allow her to undergo Yibin, because Shema Timotzi Islandess, and it'll be even into Pogim B'Erva. In both of these situations, it'll be Eishes Ach Shelo B'Makom Mitzvah, and it'll be an Issa D'Oraisa of an Erva, and therefore I am Choshesh L'Miyuta. So that's why Rav Meir, who is Choshesh L'Miyuta, says that you can have over here even with a katan or a ketana, but the rabbis say no, we ignore that miyut, even though this is a ruba, the less they come on. So therefore, it can't be that the rabbanan hold like our mishnah, because our mishnah is choshesh l'miyuta, and the rabbanan are not choshesh l'miyuta. And let's see this on the Gemara. The Gemara clearly says this. Rabbanan Savre, that no, we're not concerned in this situation about this miyut. Zil basa ruba diktanim, the vast majority of ketanim will grow up to be, Baruch Hashem, mature adults that can have children. And the rov ketanim and the majority of the ketanim, lav sarisin inu, they're not going to be growing up to be a saris. And likewise by the ketanos, by the girls. Zil basa rov ketanos lav islandess ninu. The Chacham clearly hold, even though it's a ruba, the less they come on, that you follow the majority of young women will, Baruch Hashem, grow up to be fertile adult women, and be able to have children, and won't be an islandess. So therefore, clearly, we see that the Rabbanan do not hold that we are choshesh l'miyuta when it's a ruba, the less they come on. So how can you say that the Rabbanan are the author of Mishnah? It can only be Rav Meir. The Gemara says, Taki, you're 100% right. Ela machvarto, it's white, it's clear. Masnis and Rav Meir here. Our Mishnah has to be the opinion of Rabbi Meir. As I had alluded to when we learned the same for the Mishnah, that we're choshesh l'miyuta, that is the opinion of Rav Meir, and our Mishnah, the Stam Mishnah over here, is authored by Rav Meir. Mark continues and says, so therefore, b'mayukim tuk Rabeya. How have you established our Mishnah? Our Mishnah, therefore, is the opinion of Rabeya. But keep on reading, and that's where I said there may be a problem. Amos Seifa, Haisa Lachamos, we said that if there is a mother-in-law who went overseas with her son, who is the husband of the woman who is now the widow. So in this situation, we said, we don't have to be concerned that maybe she had a child. She's a woman who could have children still. Obviously, if she was a zakena, then there would not be a concern. Then it's be an ace, and we're not choshesh for nisim. But here, she was a fertile woman, and she's a young mother-in-law, and maybe we have to be concerned that there's a child that's born. But our Mishnah said, ain't no choshesh. Now, if our Mishnah is the opinion of a mayor, he should be choshesh lemiyuta. Am I? Holich acher rov noshim, rov noshim, misarbos v'yoldos. This mother-in-law, we have to be concerned, if you hold like Rav Meir, that maybe she had a child, since the majority of women do give birth. So therefore, why aren't we concerned? So the Gemara says, because in this situation, we have miut mapilos. We have a minority of the women, Nebuch, even if they do get pregnant, that they may have had a miscarriage. Now, v'chol hayoldos, mechza zechorim, u'mechza nekevos. And as I pointed out when we did the Mishnah, the 50% chance to have a male child, the 50% chance to have a female child. So, when you go and combine smoch miuto de mapilos, the miut that a small percentage of the women miscarry, it's actually not such a small percentage. Probably between 10% and 20% of all pregnancies are miscarriages early on. Many of them very, very early on. You may not even realize, a woman may not realize that she missed her period even. But in any event, there's a percentage of minority of women who have a pregnancy that will miscarry. And when you add that, smoch miyuto de mapilos, add that minority of the women who have a miscarriage to the mechzel ekevos, the 50% that give birth to a girl, so then you have the majority of children aren't boys. The majority of pregnancies aren't boys. Vevelu zucharim miyuta. And the zucharim is a miyut, v'leichosh, but this is Rav Meir's opinion. So the Chachamim, we would understand why we would say Eino Chosheshes. But if we're dealing here with Rav Meir, so then this, it's actually a significant minority of the children that would be boys, albeit it's a minority, Rav Meir should be Choshesh. So how come we said that when the mother-in-law went over to Medina Sayam, we don't have to be concerned, as long as we know that she left without being pregnant, so we don't have to be concerned that maybe she had a child while she was overseas and there is a Yavam. But we said Eino Chosheshes. It doesn't make sense if this is Rav Meir. Someone says, maybe, Dilma, Kivan di Chasko Lashok, Lo Chayish. Maybe because there's a Chazak over here. When she left, she didn't have any children, other children than the husband here of her daughter-in-law. And her son, the husband of the daughter-in-law, was the only child that she had. So there's a Chazaka that this wife wouldn't fall to Yiba because there were no other known children. So maybe it's because there's a Chazaka that she didn't have a Yibam concern, and that's why Rav Meir would hold over here that also Eino Chosheshes, Lo Chayish, we don't have to be concerned. The Gemara says, but wait a second, in the Reisha, we said that she do have to be concerned, even though the Chazik Yibam, in the Reisha, there was a Chazaka that she would have to fall Yibam, because when the husband with the other co-wife left, there were no children, and there was a brother-in-law, so therefore there was a Chazaka that she would fall to Yibam if Chas V'Shalom, the husband, passed away. The Chazik Yibam. So in that situation, if we're saying you follow the Chazaka, so then Tiyabim, why do we say Lo Tinosiv Lo Tiyabim? So if you're telling me we follow the Chazaka, and that's why Rav Meir said that Eino Chosheshes is for the mother-in-law, then we should follow the Chazaka and say that she should fall to Yibam because there was a Chazaka that she would fall to Yibam. So Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rabba Bar Avuah, Rav Nachman said, in the name of Rabba Bar Avuah, no, the difference is the Reisha is the Issur Kares. You're dealing in the Reisha with, if she has to undergo Yibam with her brother-in-law, and it's not B'mokha Mitzvah, that's Paga B'erva, that's Paga B'Yitzvah D'Araisa of an Isser Kares. So therefore, in that situation, the rabbi said, we better be very, very extra careful. Choshu. However, in the Seifa, which is only saying, okay, we're not Choshu, there's a brother-in-law, and we are Matir this Yavama Lashuk, when she should, in fact, be waiting to go to her Yavam, so that's, quote, only an Isser Lab. So the Seifa, which is the Isser Lab, so then Lo Choshu, rabbis weren't so strict. That's Rav Nachman says the name of Rabbi Ravua. The Rabbi says, that's ridiculous. Rabbi says, no, Mirte, take a look over here. Hard Daraisa. What are you talking about? Since when do we start differentiating over here between an Issa Daraisa that's Karis and an Issa Daraisa that's a lot? If it's an Issa Daraisa, we're either Choshesh or we're not Choshesh. So, Mali Issa Karis, Mali Issa Lav. Why would you say, oh, buy an Issa Karis with Choshesh, buy an Issa Lav, an Issa Daraisa? Don't tell me it's just a lot. It's an Issa Daraisa. If you're Choshesh for an Issa Daraisa, you're Choshesh whether it's an Issa Karis or whether it's an Issa Lav. So, Rava says that cannot be the answer. So, what is the answer? El Alma Rava, Rava says, and we turn to Kufi Tesla Mideis, Rava says the answer is as follows. Reisha Chazaka Liyibum. the Ruba Lashuk. You have two things. In the Reisha, again, what's the Reisha? The case was where the husband and the co-wife went off, and there was nobody pregnant at that time, and therefore she was Muhsekes to go for Yibam. So the Chazaka is Yibam, that she was Nebuch going to be capable of having Yibam if her husband died, because neither she nor her co-wife at that point in time had children. However, Veruba Lashuk, but we have the majority that women will give birth, so obviously the woman who stayed behind, she's not going to give birth because her husband's not around, but the co-wife that went off with the husband on the business trip, so the likelihood is the majority of them will give birth. So here we have two competing principles. The chazaka is for Yibam, but the Ruba is Lashuk, and therefore the chazaka of Yibam lo odiv ki Ruba is not as strong as the Rov. So therefore, the Rov beats the chazaka, and therefore we say that lo tiabe, the lo tinase. However, va'ise miyuta de mapilos. But then we have an additional factor over here that if she did get pregnant, so then A, there's a potential miscarriage, and then B, sumoch l'chazaka. Add that on to the strength of the already existing chazaka. So since even if she did get pregnant, there's a chance that she would miscarry. And once the husband's dead, obviously there's no chance for any more children. So maybe she did get pregnant, but then she miscarried. So therefore, when you add that minority, the biyuta, that mapilos, onto the already existing chazaka, samoch l'chazaka, now, havale palgo palgo, this now turns it into, it's no longer the rov defeating the chazaka, now the rov is equal to the chazaka, and therefore, that's why we said, lo tinase, velo tisyabim, because we don't have a clear-cut reason to go with the chazaka over the rov, or the rov over the chazaka. So therefore, we say, leave things as they are, don't allow her to get married, because maybe she really is mechuyavas in yibam, because the rov of the fact that she would have a child is negated by the fact that the minority are mapilos, and you add that to the chazaka, and we also have lotis yabim, we don't allow her to have yibam, because there is a rov. So therefore, since in this situation, the rov is equal to the chazaka plus the mapilos, so we say loti nosi velosis yabim. That's the resha. But in the seifa, they're both going in the same direction. The chazaka and the rov are both going in the same direction. Chazaka l'shuk, veruba l'shuk. The chazaka is that she's muteris l'shuk, because when they left, there was no yavam. The mother-in-law only had the one child, her husband, and there was no yavam. So the chazaka is that she's muteris l'shuk. And here, veruba l'shuk as well, because even if she does give birth, so a mapilos, plus the 50% of the children will be women, so the 50% of the women, plus the mapilos, that's the majority. So the ruba is also that she won't have a brother-in-law, a new yavam, brought into the world. And therefore, vevele zecharim miyuta de miyuta. Now, the chances of having a new brother-in-law is what we call a miyuta de miyuta. It's not a miyuta, it's a miyuta de miyuta. It's like a double miyuta, because the 50% of the girls added to the percentage that are mapilos, so that makes it an unlikely situation. Plus, you have the chazak over here, so this is called a miyuta de miyuta. Pablo Zacharin miyuta de miyuta, the miyuta de miyuta, even Rav Meir, lo chayish Rabbi Meir. Rav Meir is not choshesh over here as well. Now, I would dare say that Rashi calls this, as this miyuta miyuta is a combination over here of the chazaka with a regular miyuta that makes it a miyuta miyuta. That's not the normal lashon that we always use, miyuta miyuta. Sometimes we use a lashon miyuta miyuta as something that is extremely unlikely. Not that it's a combination over here of chazaka with a rov. So the normal lashon of miyuta miyuta is an extremely unlikely event. Whereas here, we're saying that you're combining the chazaka with the rov, and that's what makes it a miyuta de miyuta. In any event, that's how we can explain why even Rav Meir would say that the wife doesn't have to be choshesh, that maybe the mother-in-law had a son while she was overseas, and therefore she has to wait for Yibam. And we quote the Mishnah, it said, Lo si nosiv, lo si abim mechule. We said in the Reisha, when the co-wife went overseas with the husband, that we have to figure out, was she or was she not pregnant? Did she or did she not have a child? So how long do you wait? So Gemara says, well, Olam, do you wait forever? So when are we going to ever find out that this woman didn't have a child? Until you definitive proof that she didn't have a child, the woman here, the tzara who left behind, can't get married? So Ziri says, no. Liatzma, she has to wait anyway to get married herself, regardless of any other factors, because of the din of havchana, to make sure that we know who the father is. So they shouldn't be giving birth to a child and not know whether the dead husband is the father, and it really was a 9-month pregnancy from the first husband, or If she gets married right away, it could be a seven-month pregnancy from the new husband, and therefore she always has to wait. Any woman after marriage has to wait 3 months till she gets married. This is true even if she can't have children for whatever the reason. You always wait 3 months. That's the din of Havchana, low plug. It's across the board. So Raziri says she has to wait anyway, la'atzma, for her own purposes. She has to wait shlosh chadashim. And now l'chaverta, she has to wait 9 months after the death of her husband, Tisha, because at this point in time, we could say mimanushach. The choletzes mimanushach. If, in fact, the co-wife gave birth, so now there was no chiyav of yibum v'chalitza, but in this situation, Ziri says, mimanushach, do a chalitza, if it wasn't necessary, no harm. If, in fact, the co-wife, who was off on the business trip with the husband, didn't, in fact, give birth, and she does require yibum or chalitza, because there's no child, and the husband died childless, so now you're getting chalitza, so muteris l'shach, so mimanushach. You give her chalitza because she needs it, or you give her chalitza and she didn't need it, but the woman, nevertheless, is muteris l'shach. So Ziri says, you wait 9 months after the death of the husband, and everything is good. Rabbi Chanina disagrees. Rabbi Chanina Amar, La'atzma Shloshti, I agree with the din of Havchana for herself. She would have to wait 3 months anyway. However, L'chaver Taliolam, until you can ascertain for certain that the co-wife did not give birth to a child, then you have to wait. You can't just assume after 9 months to do a chalitza. Now, why not? Tamar says, Taka, Ziri was 100% right. Mimadashach, you do the chalitza after 9 months. You can't have any other children for the husband. The husband died. So after 9 months passed, she either had a child and she doesn't need chalitza, or she didn't have a child and she does need chalitza, and mimanushach, you're doing the chalitza. Ziri is 100% correct. What is Rav Chanina saying? They have to wait forever until you know for certain that she didn't give birth. V'tachlos mimanushach, like Ziri said. So when it says, Am Abaye bar Oven, Rav Chanina bar Oven, the two children of Rav Oven, Abaye and Rav Chanina, both of them said the same thing. Amri Tavayu. Gezeira, we make a gezeira beer, we don't allow chalitza to be done, because Shemi Hevlad, let's say we do find out, after she underwent chalitza, 2 years later we find out, hey, she in fact, the co-wife did have a child, and this chalitza was not necessary, and the co-wife had given birth to a ben kayama, and the chalitza was unnecessary. Oh, so Baruch Hashem, now this woman really never underwent chalitza, and now she's muteris to marry a kohen. Midrabanan, a woman who's a chalitza, is not allowed to go marry a kohen. So now what's going to happen? The name so ato matzrichal kruz likahuna. If she goes and marries a kohen, people are going to say, hey, a chalutza is allowed to marry a kohen, and that will be a terrible takola for all future generations, all future times. We said the rabbis officiated at this wedding. The Rosh Bahag was the Masada Kedusha, and this is perfectly permissible. It must be that a kohen is allowed to marry a chalutza, but that's not the din. So therefore, we have to make an announcement to make sure that everybody knows that the chalutza in this situation wasn't a real chalutza. It wasn't a necessary chalutza, and therefore it's as if she didn't have chalutza, and that's why she's marrying a kohen. So I said, no, nuvalitzucha, so do that. So why would Rav Chanina say that we still have to wait until we know for certain that she never had a child? So if you did a chalutza that was, quote, unnecessary, so make an announcement. Someone says no, because the rabbis were concerned. Dilma Ika the heavy b'chalitza. There will be bills people that were present at the chalitza, the low heavy b'chalitza, and they didn't read the newspapers that said that this was a mistake in chalitza, and therefore they're going to see this woman married to a kohen. They're going to say, "I saw the rabbis marry this chalitza to a kohen." They're not going to know that it wasn't a real chalitza, and they're going to only remember that there was a real chalitza, and therefore they're going to think that a chalitza is allowed to marry a kohen. V'amrei kosharu chalitza l'kohen, and that's going to lead to a takkala. So therefore, Rabbi Chanina says, because of this potential concern, wait till you know for certain that the Tzara, the co-wife who was off in the Medina Sayyam, did not have a child or did have a child, and then we can allow the co-wife who remained behind over here to go and get married or to undergo Ibum. Morris says, wait a second, if you're concerned about doing a chalitza that's not necessary and that could lead to trouble because people eventually say that that chalitza wasn't really necessary and she'll marry a kohen and people won't know that, but we do that all the time. We did that in yesterday's year, Tanan. We said, Nitan li ben b'mdina siyam. We said, if a woman had gone overseas with her husband and she left without having children, and then she returns and she says, never, my husband died, but I had a son while I was overseas. V'omrit, she says, I did have a son, but meiz b'niv, yachakach bali, but my son Nebuch died first, and then my husband died, so I was still b'chuyevis in Yibum, so we believe her. And that matters because she's not changing around her chazakah. And we say, Pesh osa Pesh ita. She didn't have to tell anybody she had a son. She just had to say her husband's dead, and we believe her, and we would allow her to have a Yibum. So the fact that she adds in what would be extraneous information, that she had a son, and the son died before the husband, so a Pesh osa Pesh ita, it's establishing the chazakah as it is, and not changing the chazakah, so now that she's believed. However, she said it the other way around, Meis Bali, V'yachakach B'ni. If she said that my husband died first, and only afterwards did the child that I had with him die, and therefore I'm not mechuyev as a yibum, so the enenemem, she's not believed. But it's not that she's totally disbelieved. The choshim the rabbi, because she's saying, I'm not allowed to have yibum. So we are choshesh for her words, the choletz is lo misabemes, and we make her undergo chalitza, and not yibam. In this way, even if she is wrong, so she underwent chalitza, so no problem. And if she was right, so then she underwent an unnecessary chalitza, nishkeferloch. But the Gemara says, we should be concerned. The leichosh, because you know what's going to happen? Duma asuay the amriki the karma. You know what? Witnesses are eventually going to come and say, you know, we were at the funeral of her son. Yeah, it was such a terrible thing. 2 days after her husband died, Nebuchadnezzar got into an accident and her son died. And now you're going to have witnesses saying that she didn't require chalitza, and then she's going to go marry a kohen. And then, since she's allowed to marry the kohen, a kohen, because the chalitza wasn't necessary, we'll have to make an announcement. And you just said that we don't make this announcement because there'll be those people that will be present at the chalitza and not present at the announcement. But here you see that we do allow that. And we do allow that. So it seems to be a stira to what you just said. So our Papa says, not a stira. We're dealing here that woman was a begrusha. The woman that we said, let her go, and now marry a Kohen, and we'll make an announcement, is no big deal, because she was already asked to marry a Kohen, and nobody's going to let her marry a Kohen, because she was a Grush already. So the fact that she's a Chalutza doesn't make it anything worse. She's already also in the rice as a grusha to marry a Kohen, so the additional prohibition, the Rabbanan, so that doesn't impact anything over here. She's also to marry a Kohen, there's no takkola that can come. That's teretz number one for our papa. Teretz number two, Ruchia Bered Rav Huna, he says the following teretz, Ruchia Bered Rav Huna Amar, V'omra Aniv Hu Nachbeinu B'ma'ora. She testifies that she and her husband and the child that they had were hiding away from the persecutors in a cave somewhere. And therefore, there is zero chance that anybody would have come and be a witness that she, in fact, did have a child. She's saying nobody knew about the birth of her child. They were running away from the persecutors, and they were hiding out in a cave, and that's why her husband died. They died of starvation, and the child died a week later. So we do have to be concerned that maybe she's telling us the truth, that the husband died, and then the child died, so therefore she's not allowed to undergo yibam choshesh for this idea, l'dvarah. However, there is zero chance that anybody's going to come along and substantiate that, because she's telling us that there are zero chances that there's a witness. Nobody knows what happened, because we were hiding out in the cave. So therefore, there is no concern that people will see that she married a Kohen as a chalutza, and they'll have heard the chalitza, but they didn't hear the hachraza. But in our case, there is such a concern, so therefore, Rechinin says we don't allow it to undergo even a chalitza until we find out exactly what happened, when we do have a definitive answer to did her co-wife have a child or not have a child for Medina Sayyah. Next Mishnah. Shtei Yevamos, you have two women that are married to two brothers, okay? They're not related to each other. You have Reuven, who's married to Sarah, and Shimon, who is married to Leah. Sarah and Leah are not related to each other. Two Yevamos, Shnei Yevamos, Zuomer is Meiz Bali. And Sarah comes along and says, Nebuch, my husband Reuven died. And likewise, Leah comes along and says, Nebuch, my husband Shimon died. So each of them is believed this is a time of peace between them and their husbands, and it's a time of peace in the world. So the halacha is that you normally believe the woman in Eid Echad is believed to say that her husband Nebuch passed away. So each of them says that. But we have a rule that the Yevama, the Shnei Yevamos over here, the potential co-wife, Sarah and Leah in this situation are potential co-wives if one of their husbands were to die, and they were the five women that we learned the other day that aren't believed, because there's always a concern that there's an intrinsic hatred over there, a dislike for each other, that they may become co-wives. So therefore, normally under circumstances like this, Sarah would not be believed to say that the Yavam passed away. In other words, Reuven, the Yavam of Leah, Shimon's wife, is not allowed to be believed to say that Leah doesn't have to undergo Yibam, and vice versa. Leah is not allowed to believe Sarah saying that her Yavam Reuven has passed away. So we got a problem over here. Each of them is permitted to be believed to say that their husband died, but they're not permitted to say that the sister-in-law doesn't have to undergo Yibam. So we have a paradox over here. They're believed to say that the husband died for themselves, but they're not believed to say that the husband died for their sister-in-law. So when this one says Zu Omeres Meiz Bali, Zu Omeres Meiz Bali, Zu Asura Mipnei Bala Shuzu, Zu Asura Mipnei Bala Shuzu, they each still can't go and get married, because there is the at least theoretical possibility that the other one is lying, and therefore there really still is a Yavam, and therefore they have to undergo Yibam. But the other one said that the guy is dead, so therefore there's no way that they'll undergo Yibam or Chalitza, because the sister-in-law says that that husband is dead. So we have a paradox over here that they're believed to say that their own husband is dead, but they're not believed to say for the sister-in-law that your yavam is dead. Same person. It's the husband and the yavam, two different perspectives, but they're only believed to say that their husband is dead, but they're not believed because they're one of the five women that aren't allowed to testify for the sister-in-law that the sister-in-law's yavam is dead. I hope that was clear. The Mishnah continues and says, Lazu Eidim, Belazu Ein Eidim. However, let's say one of them has witnesses that her husband did die. So let's say Sarah does in fact have witnesses that Reuven died. So we're not relying upon her testimony anymore. So then in that situation, Eshiyeshla Eidim Asura. So somewhat paradoxically, Sarah, who has witnesses that her husband died, but isn't allowed to rely upon the testimony of Leah that the Yavam died. So Sarah is stuck. Even though she has proof that her husband's dead, she doesn't have proof that her Yavam, Shimon, is dead. And paradoxically, Vesheinla Eidim, but the wife who is only relying on upon her own testimony, Leah, who's saying that Shimon died, is relying upon her own testimony, she doesn't have witnesses, she's muteris to marry Nalashuk because there are Eidim that her Yavam died, and she's not relying upon the testimony of Sarah. So again, somewhat of a paradox. The Mishnah continues and says, Lazu banim v'lazu ein banim. Let's say Sarah had children, so therefore she doesn't have to undergo Yibam because she in fact has children. There's no mitzvah of Yibam in that situation. Eishasach shalob mocha mitzvah, so she doesn't have to undergo Yibam. And she's believed to say that her husband died, so she'll go scot-free at this point in time. Eshiyeshlo banim muteris. So the one that says that she has children, Lazu banim, so she's allowed to go, based upon her testimony that her husband died, and go marry Lashuk. The other one doesn't have any children, so in that situation, she can't rely upon the testimony of Sarah to say that Sarah's husband Reuven died. So Leah cannot rely upon that testimony because she's one of the five women, the sister-in-law is one of the five women, that we don't trust their testimony because we're concerned that maybe they just have it out to get that sister-in-law. They dislike each other, and she's really lying. So since there is no evidence, so Sarah's statement that Reuven died doesn't help Leah, who is waiting Yibam. She is believed to say that her husband died, but she's waiting Yibam with that Reuven, and she can't trust Sarah to say that Reuven died. But Sarah, who has children, doesn't need the testimony from her sister-in-law that Shimon died because she doesn't fall to Yibam because she has children. So in this situation, again, Eshiyesh Laban Muteris, Sarah, who has children, goes off now and can marry based upon her own testimony that her husband died. But Leah, who doesn't have any testimony that Reuven died, other than Sarah saying so, Veshein Labanim Asura, so she can't go off and marry. Finally, what happens if there was a Levi and Yehuda in the picture? So there were Reuven and Shimon, and they're married to, respectively, two unrelated women, Sarah and Leah. So in this situation, Nisyadmu, Sarah goes and undergoes Yibam with Levi, because again, she's believed to say that her husband died, so she goes Yibam with her brother-in-law, Levi. And likewise, Leah is believed to say that her husband Shimon died, and she undergoes Yibam with the other brother that's still around, Yehuda. And in this situation, Nisyabnu, and then Nebuch, Levi, and Yehuda also die. Umeisu ha-yivamim. So now they fall back into the same situation they were in before. Neither one can believe that the other one's husband, the first husband, died. So from Reuven's perspective, Sarah is believed to say Reuven's dead, but Leah is not believed that Sarah said that Reuven is dead. And likewise, from Shimon being dead, so Leah is believed to say that Shimon died, but Sarah is not believed that Leah said that Shimon died. So in this situation, we're right back to the way we were beforehand. So the Tanakhama of the Mishnah says, in this situation with Mesu Ayavadim, where Levi and Yehuda died, so Asura is Linasi. So now they're back in the same paradoxical situation that they were previously, according to the Tanakhama, that each of them can't trust the testimony of their sister-in-law. So therefore, they now have to wait till we have definitive proof that Reuven died and that Shimon died in order for them to go and get married Lashuk. Rabbi Loza says no. We allow them to get married to Levi and Yehuda. And therefore, hold Hutrul Yadmin, since we obviously allow them to go and get married to Levi and Yehuda, the Yadmin, so then clearly we have to believe that each of them lost their husband, because there's no way that they would be allowed to go and marry the Yavam if in fact their original husband was still alive. That would be a tremendous issur of numerous complications and problems, that you're marrying your husband's brother's lo bar mitzvah, plus you're still married to your husband. So it's an issur of adultery as well, eishes ish. So since Rav Elazar says we allow them to marry Levi and Yehuda, so that's it. We absolutely believe that Reuven and Shimon are dead, even though we relied upon the testimony of the sister-in-laws to get us to that point, and Rav Elazar says they now can go marry Lashuk. We don't have to be concerned Sarah doesn't have to be concerned that Shimon is still alive, and Leah doesn't have to be concerned that Reuven is still alive in this situation. Gemara starts up and says, Tana, lezu edim ubanim, lezu lo edim lo banim, shtei mutaros. The Gemara adds an additional case over here that if, again, we have Sarah and Leah, two unrelated women who are married to two new brothers, Reuven married Sarah and Shimon married Leah. So in this situation, they are each believed to say on their own that their husband died, but they can't be trusted to say that the Yavam died for the other sister-in-law. So then in this situation, if Sarah has both Edom and children, so now because of her children, she doesn't have to rely upon Leah's testimony that Shimon died. And Leah likewise, Luzu lo Edom lo Banim. So Leah doesn't have either witnesses that her husband died, and she also doesn't have children. So then in this situation, she is allowed to rely upon the testimony of the Edom that Reuven died. So in this situation, both of them, Shtei Mutaros, both of them can go get married because each of them either has Edom or they have children that allow them to go and not worry about Yibam. Then we said in the Mishnah, Nisiadmu Umeisnu Hayavamim, if we had had the wives of Reuven and Shimon each claiming that their respective husbands had died, so they then each went to Yibam to and another brother, Levi and Yehuda. So in this situation, we had a machlokas between the Tanakhama, who said that if Levi and Yehuda then died, then we're back to the original problem that Shimon's wife can't believe Reuven's wife saying that Reuven is dead, and Reuven's wife can't believe Shimon's wife saying that Shimon is dead. So they're back in limbo until we find out definitively. Whereas Rabbi Elazar Omer, no. Once we allowed them to marry Levi and Yehuda, so then, when Levi and Yehuda die, we can say for a fact that neither brother is still alive, Reuven or Shimon, for either of those two wives, and therefore they can go marry Lashuk. Why did Rabbi Elazar say that? So boy, Rav asked the following shaila. There's two possible reasons for what Rabbi Elazar said. Is it Mishum de Kosavar Tzora Me'ida L'Chaverta? Because he actually disagrees with the basic din that we've been talking about. He basically says that Reuven's wife can testify for Shimon's wife, and Shimon's wife can testify on behalf of Reuven's wife. He disagrees with the concept of those five women, and he says that the potential tzaras to each other can, in fact, testify for each other. Is that Rabbi Elazar's reasoning? Or, Odilma, Mishum Dehi, Lo Mekalkala Nafsha? Or is it, no, in this situation, she's not going to be suspected of wanting to ruin it for her potential co-wife, the other sister-in-law, because guess what? She's getting married also. So therefore, if she's ruining it for the other sister-in-law, she'd be also ruining it for herself. So therefore, when she's saying her husband's dead, and then she gets married, so then that clearly is proof positive that she's not just trying to ruin it for her sister-in-law. She actually believes that her husband is dead, and therefore that's why Rabbi Elazar says we're allowed to believe her in this situation. But in general, he agrees that sister-in-laws aren't allowed to go and testify for each other because there's a concern that they have a hidden motive over here to try to ruin it for their sister-in-law. So, l'may nafkamina, what's the difference between whether we say Rabbi Elazar doesn't hold it all from this din, or he says here we have reasons to show why that din doesn't apply over here, but in general he does hold for the concern that sister-in-laws can't testify for each other. And we turn to Kuf Chav, and the difference would be li'in suve litzara mikame dida. Do we require Sarah in this situation to go and first get married, and only then can Leah, Shimon's wife, believe her that, yes, I don't have to worry about Yibam because Reuven is really dead? Or, no, do we say that the first opinion that we had suggested for Elazar, he doesn't hold from this din, so even if Sarah doesn't go get married first, then Leah is still allowed to go and get married without worrying about Yibam. And that's what the Gemara now tells us. Is the machlokas. If you say that this rule doesn't apply, so then Aval got the low insiv, even though Sarah didn't get married first, Mansivin lo litzara. So Leah is allowed to go get married anyway, because we do believe Sarah, and we don't require her to demonstrate that she really believes it by getting married. Then, in that situation, Leah can get married even if Sarah didn't get married. However, in the situation, we're saying it's only because she wouldn't be makalkelis herself. So then, iyamis mishum dehilo makalkel nafsha. So then, instead, we would require Leah to first see if Sarah got married, and only then could Leah get married. Sivin lo litzara, ilo insiv lo menasvino lo. If she doesn't get married first, then we wouldn't allow Leah to believe it. My, what is the understanding of Rabbi Elazar's opinion? Now, this leads us into this new sugya, so we'll go over the question again tomorrow, but we'll stop over here and go over this again tomorrow. Again, we learned today for a foolish shleima, for someone undergoing a procedure on the first day of Rosh Chodesh Tammuz, all Chol Yisrael should have a foolish shleima in the schus of our learning for them.